drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting, declining outside contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The Beacon Group insists on providing a safe and effective meeting place so all who wish to may recover from alcoholism. Therefore, we ask all attendees to foster a secure and welcoming environment, refraining from any behavior that may compromise another's safety. As our traditions remind us, our common welfare is paramount. Each member of Alcoholics Anonymous is but a small part of a great whole. For more information about safety in AA, see the AA Safety Card and Safety in AA, our common welfare. Please join me in the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Lisa, will you read the steps?
I'd love to.
Thank you.
All right, Lisa.
I'm really new to this. Just kidding, Lisa, I'm an alcoholic. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand Him. Four, making a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Four, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of people we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understand Him, praying only for knowledge of His will and for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening. As a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thank you, Lisa. Tonight is anniversary night, and as such, we'll be honoring our celebrants at the start of the meeting. Tonight, I believe we just have one celebrant. Would the celebrant please join me on stage? This is that old script. We lost it. No. We take this time each month to recognize group members as they mark milestones in their sobriety. It is our belief that pausing in gratitude for these milestones provides hope and inspiration and also fosters love and support for one another. We do ask everyone to keep in mind the number of celebrants and the end time of the meeting. Not super relevant. It's the group's conscience that celebrants try to limit their shares to a minute or so. And now please join me in singing.
Happy anniversary to you. Happy anniversary to you. Happy anniversary, dear Lisa. Happy anniversary to you.
Okay, so tonight our first and only celebrant is Arisa with 30 years.
I'm not going to bother with changing the mic stand because most of the other guys are going to be shorter. Hi, everyone. My name's Arisa. I'm most definitely an alcoholic. I don't know about you, but when I walked in the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, I never would have thought, yeah, I'm going to hang around here for 30 years. I didn't think I'd even get to be 30 years old, let alone 30 years sober. So it's really a miracle. One of my sponsees on my anniversary, she sent me a text and she said, you're welcome for your sobriety. And I am. I am truly, truly grateful. You know, like my very first anniversary, I was so excited. I was down court in Houston, Texas at this big clubhouse. My sponsor was there. I went running across and I found her and I was like, I'm so proud. I've got a year sober. And she was like, excuse me? She said, it is your job to be grateful. It's my job to be proud of you. And And I wouldn't be here without all you guys. Obviously, this is my home group. I love this group. And, you know, over these last 30 years, there have been a lot of ups, there have been a lot of downs, you know, from deaths and surgeries and 9/11 and all this stuff, and babies born sick, and all this stuff, all the good, all the bad, a lot of, you know, insisting on enjoying my life. And I'm a little down tonight, if you haven't noticed. I'm hurting, my back hurts, everything hurts, my head hurts. And I just got told I'm going to get 2 more surgeries in this next year. And I'm actually grateful. I'm really, really grateful. I'm grateful that I get to do this sober. I'm grateful that I get to learn how to have spiritual temper tantrums. You know, and people always say, like, I didn't realize it was that bad. It's like, yeah, it's worse than that. But today is where I am. This is where I am. This is what matters to me. You know, you guys make my life beautiful. And I love every one of you, and I want to thank you for my sobriety. I mean that from the bottom of my heart.
Thanks, Teresa. Because of tonight's celebration, the format of tonight's meeting is only one 10-minute speaker, followed by our main speaker, who will speak for 30 minutes. All of our meetings are recorded and accessible on our website, beacongroupaa.com. We support AA's statements of unity and anonymity, and therefore ask all our speakers to identify by first name only and to refrain from using profanity. Tonight, our first 10-minute speaker is Mike.
You might. It out. Yeah, hold on.
Mm-hmm. All right, look at
that. I'm Mike. I'm an alcoholic.
Mike.
Hi.
See if that stays. Good to be here. I haven't been to this meeting in about like 8 years. I remember the last time I was here was at Faulkner Hospital in between, because it was at the place in Brighton, and then I got asked to speak, and that was the last time I was here. And this meeting was like a huge part of my early sobriety from my first year. I was very active. This was the first meeting that I ever spoke at. It's the first meeting that I had a position at. And it's crazy to think that that kid, like 8 years ago, I was 22 years old. I thought, like, you know, last time I was here, I had like a year sober, maybe like a year and a half. And I was like, oh yeah, I've got it all figured out, you know, like, it's going to be so good. And I thought, like, the trajectory of my life, just because I was sober, was meaning it was just going to go up. And that's not to say that, like, my life isn't awesome, but hi, how you doing? Yeah, just to quickly qualify, you know, like, I didn't think alcohol or anything was going to be like a part of my life from a young age. And but from a young age, I was restless, irritable, and discontent. And I used anything I could to sort of seek outside myself. And that came in many different forms. But that's not what makes me an alcoholic. What makes me an alcoholic is when I finally drank and did some other stuff that, like, I finally felt like I belonged. And the first time I drank, I remember I blacked out, and a lot of you heard my story, but I skipped summer school and rode my bike to my friend's dad's house in North Attleboro, and we had stolen a bunch of liquor out of this contractor's house, and I was like 16 maybe, and I blacked out right away, woke up underneath this table. There were a bunch of people there that weren't there before. And some lady came in to buy weed from my friend, and she looked at me underneath the table. My head was in a bucket, and there was like a bunch of puke and stuff. And she looked at me, and she was like, "Oh, you're never gonna do this again, huh?" And I looked up at her like she was stupid. And I was like, "Hell, something, yeah, I'm gonna do this again." And that was it. Like, I had arrived. Like, that was what. I drank before school, during school, after school, 16 years old, getting kicked out of school, arrested. The consequences started to pile up, like, right away, but it didn't matter because I finally felt like I could be the person that I wanted to be. I finally felt like I could do the things that I wanted to do. I could say the things I wanted to say. I could talk to people that I wanted to talk to. I could punch somebody in the face if I wanted to do that. I could tell my mom that I didn't like her or whatever. You know, I could do all this stuff, and like alcohol was making it possible, you know? And I didn't like realize that at the time. Like, that's not, I was like, oh yeah, I'm finally this guy I want to be. It was just that I really liked the effect that alcohol had on me. And, you know, I learned this all coming into AA, and my drinking progressed very quickly, and you know, I switched from vodka to beer and all that stuff, and I had to stop drinking during the week, and I would only drink on the weekends, and I would get in trouble, and then like I would look at my drinking, stop drinking for 2 weeks, and this was all in a very short period of time, from 16 to 21, and I always said I needed to stop drinking before I turned 21, or else something really bad was going to happen. And if you've said that before, welcome, because you're in the right place. I graduated high school and got a job doing tree work, and I thought I was like, this is going to be sick. I was making like 14 bucks an hour. It was so good. I could just like buy enough Rubinoff, or no, I was drinking like Steel Reserve, and just like kind of do whatever I wanted to do and live in my parents' house and be 20. And then I turned 21, and a month and a half after my 21st birthday, I got into a car accident, and, you know, I was in a coma for 2 weeks and all that stuff, and, oh, it's muted. I'm sorry that you haven't heard all of that so far. Can you hear me now? Yep, thumbs up. And, okay, thumbs up. Hi. 5 minutes. And so, yeah, I got in a car accident. I was in a coma for 2 weeks. I had a lot of injuries. You know, I broke all the bones in my face, brain injury. I broke my femur. You know, I broke both my kneecaps, had heart surgery, had surgery on my face, titanium rod through my femur, all sorts of stuff. And I woke up from the coma, and I looked at my mom, and I was like, what happened? You know, and she's like, oh, you were in an accident. And I was like, oh, I was drinking, wasn't I? And she was like, yeah. And I knew right then, I was like, I just like knew. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, this is going to cure my alcoholism. You know, like, I'm just going to like stop thinking about drinking. This is just going to be fine. And then I would have like these dreams about like, I would like taste Pabst Blue Ribbon in my mouth when I'd wake up, and like I'd be like obsessed about drinking, and I'd be like, oh, okay, so like in like 2 months, like my dad's not going to be really that mad at me anymore, even though I was like very close to death and had these like crazy hospital bills, and like it's just going to be fine. But I was also at a place in my life where I couldn't imagine my life with or without alcohol. Like, I knew that I wanted to stop drinking, but I knew that if I didn't do something about it, I was going to drink again. And just like all the other times before, like I had that desperation, but I didn't have any willingness before to do anything. But this time, I knew somebody who was sober, and he was sober like a year and a half at the time. And I had kind of drank with him or whatever. And he was like for sure an alcoholic, at least I thought. And well, he for sure still is, but I called him, and he was like, oh yeah, we were talking. I grew up with him, and his younger brother is like a really good friend of mine. And he was like, yeah, it was explained to me that I have a threefold disease. It's spiritual, mental, and physical. And like, once I start drinking, I can't stop. And I was like, okay. And then once I'm removed from alcohol, I don't stop thinking about it until I get it again. And I was like, okay. And then I put drinking in front of everything in front of my life. And the way I sort of define it now is like my comfort, like my, what I want. I put that in front of everything in my life. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. So like, yeah, I'm an alcoholic. And he was like, okay, you're going to come to this meeting on Saturday night. It's called Brookline Young People's. And I was like, okay. And I was kind of excited or whatever. And I went there, and I thought I was 21, I thought I was going to be like the youngest person to ever think about getting sober. And I walked in there, and there were people here tonight who were there, and I was like, what is this? They were talking about God, they're like, the steps were there. You know, I try to make it apparent my whole life that I don't believe in God. and I was like, no, this is like whatever. But everyone was like, oh yeah, just keep an open mind, like it's a spiritual program, like all this stuff. And I was like, yeah, definitely. And I didn't want to do it, you know. I really didn't want to like give myself over to AA like that. And so I found another meeting, and that was the only thing I was willing to do, was go to another meeting. And then after that, I was willing to go to another meeting. And then after that, I was willing to go to another meeting. Until eventually people kind of figured me out and knew that I was like just pretending to talk on my phone during the break, or like run into my car, or like, you know, not really sticking around or whatever. And somebody was like, oh, you should stay for the business meeting. And I was like, okay. And got a sponsor. And, you know, like my life started to just like sort of move forward in this way of like, I remember driving home one day from work, and I was like, oh yeah, everything's going to like be okay if I just keep like going to AA. And that was the first time I like felt hope. And I remember sharing that here when I first was asked to speak. This guy Mike asked me to speak like right before the meeting, and I thought that that was like going to be it, you know what I mean? I thought that that time where I felt hope driving home was going to be it. But like since I've like gotten sober, my life today is like insane. I mean, it's just like so crazy, and it's not what I wanted, it's not what I needed. It's just the life that I have now that I'm able to be present because of Alcoholics Anonymous. And just like Arisa said, I'm like so grateful that I remain willing to grow along spiritual lines, because it's just the willingness that keeps me here. And I'll just say one last thing. I've done like just about everything that you're like not supposed to do besides drink, and like my life still continues to move forward because I'm active in Alcoholics Anonymous, and because I have a sponsor, and because I work the steps, and because I have a home group, and because I'm of service, and because I do all that stuff regardless of whether I want to or not. So thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Jeez, okay. We will now observe the seven tradition. AA has no dues or fees for AA membership, but we do have expenses. The seven tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's expenses, the seven tradition is essential at every level of AA service. AA's usual suggestion is a $2 contribution per meeting. We are passing the basket, but you may also observe the seven tradition digitally on Venmo. For those of you in person, you will see a QR code in the basket. Our Venmo handle is at Beacon-Group. Although there are no dues or fees for AA membership, we do have expenses. Our rent is $200 per month. Please give what you can and see our treasurer, Megan, with any questions. AA also has a set of traditions which apply to the group in the same manner that the 12 steps apply to the individual. Tonight, Mike P. has been asked to read the 12 traditions.
I'm Mike, I'm an alcoholic. The 12 traditions. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on AA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscious. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for AA membership is the desire to stop drinking. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, AA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible for those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the AA name ought never to be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain a personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thank you, Mike. Speaking group is run by a business meeting, which meets on the third Wednesday of each month, immediately following the open speaker meeting, in a hybrid format, both here at TVZ and online. This is your opportunity to get more involved. All group members are encouraged to attend and participate. We hope you can join us. Will all group members please raise their hands? Thank you. And now let's welcome our main speaker, Taylor. Woo!
What's up, Beacon Group? Got it. My name is Taylor. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Taylor.
Wow, I'm so happy to be here. I knew I was going to cry. It's probably going to happen again. Bear with me. I think it's coming. Okay. Wow. My home group is the Tuesday Night Young People's Meeting in Santa Barbara, California. My sobriety date is September 1st, 2012. I'm overwhelmed, you guys. Like, speaking as the main speaker at Beacon Group, wow, you know, like, I moved here in 2016, and I was living across the street from this woman that you guys may know. Her name is Sarah. And this other person told me, her name was Anwa, and she told me, oh, I lived in Boston. Call this woman Arisa. She's, like, incredible. And I was like, thank God. You know, I have someone. I called Arisa. She picks up. Okay. She picks up the phone. She didn't know me. She didn't know my number. If you've ever called Arisa and or know, like, her life, I think that's incredible. She's, like, a very busy woman. And I imagined her, like, drinking lemonade, looking out at her backyard, which I think it was probably a lot different. And she said, oh, come to this Beacon Group meeting. You're going to live across the street from one of my sponsees, and here's this person, Anna's her phone number. Reach out to them. Anna met me for the first time I came to Beacon Group, which I was late for because, like, a TV was getting delivered. So that's, like, really important. Sarah was on her honeymoon. She was in Thailand, and I was like, okay, whatever. Like, I guess I wasn't important enough. And when I came to Beacon Group, and I was so afraid. Oh, my gosh. There was all these, like, really young, like, 20, 30-year-old women that were super sober, and they weren't getting parades thrown for them because they were young and sober. And I was like, oh, no. Like, I need to find, like, the retirement center immediately because I need groupies. Right, like, I can't be in this group, but, you know, the speaker started, and they were, like, saying things I'd never heard before, and I was like, oh, these main speakers, like, holy, you know, bad word, and, like, that I'm a main speaker tonight is, like, really, really incredible, because when I showed up at this meeting, oh, man, I was just waiting for things to be over, like, I was, like, I couldn't wait for things to start, and I couldn't wait for them to be over. And that's how I was living for years in this program. And I don't live like that anymore, which is really amazing. I'm going to stop crying at some point. Okay, so, you know, when I hear my sponsor speak, she starts, like, with her sobriety date and her home group and stuff like that. And she talks about, like, you know, what she was like, what happened, and, you know, what she's like now. So I'll start doing the script now because I got really off track. Wow, but I just wanted to take a second to, like, really thank, like, the people that keep coming back that I saw, like, what is it, 4, 5, 6, 7 years ago? I drove by the church it was at on my way here, and I just, like, remember, like, ripping so many cigs, like, outside. And having so much fun, right? Like, I found, like, such a home in the Beacon Group. You guys gave me jobs. which I hated, you know? I was the name tag person, and I, like, saw the name tags, and, like, the first thing I saw, I was like, oh, I gotta go get my name tag. And then I thought, oh, yeah, like, I don't live here anymore. Like, I don't have a name tag, which, like, it should be there anyways. Like, I'll talk to whoever does a name tag. Okay, so I'm really happy about the vegan group, if you hadn't noticed. I'll get back to that later. So I got sober in Arkansas. I'm from Arkansas. I grew up there. And, you know, when I think about, like, growing up, there was so much, like, fun. Like, it's really kind of, I remember that a lot. I remember being so angry. Like, you could set me off like that, right? Like, anything and everyone affected me. My parents, I was just with them, and we were reminiscing on this story about my older brother. He's a year and a half older, and, like, we can really, like, we just have this unique thing of setting each other off, just like a snap at the, I don't even have to be conscious, and he can set me off, right? And the same thing for him. It's just too easy. And he was taunting me from inside, and I was outside, and there was, like, rocks. I was probably, like, 7. There was, like, rocks on the ground, and I picked them up, and I launched them out the window because I was so angry at him. And he's like, is that all you got? You know? Like, you know, and I was like, oh, I'll show you. Like, you know, I broke the window, and my parents, you know, had me pay to fix it. And I was like, yeah, but it's his fault. Like, he made me angry. And they were like, you threw the rock, you know? And that's kind of how my brain worked. Like, it was the other person's fault why I got angry. It was, like, their fault why I got sad. It was, you know, my actions weren't my fault. They were the other person's fault or the other thing's fault. Even though my parents told me, like, no, you're responsible for this. Like, and I was like, no, that's not how that works. Like, no, they're responsible for my actions. And it would just make me more angry. And so, like, there was, like, all this anger mixed with, like, all this, like, fun and, like, really great, like, experiences playing sports and being a part of. Like, I don't remember ever, like, feeling like I was, like, different than other people. Like, I really had a lot of people I hung out with. I had, like, friends in sports. I was, like, really good at everything. I recently took this quiz at work, and it was like, your personality type is just naturally good at everything. And I was like, yeah, that tracks. Like, and so I was feeling, like, really comfortable because I would just excel at these things and people liked me. Sponsor's looking at me. And so like, as I was angry, I was also having, like, a good time. Like, whatever, I don't know. There's probably a lot more to in there with all of that. But that's, like, really what I remember the most. I remember getting in trouble a lot for lying. I loved to lie. Like, it just was natural. Like, I would lie about nothing and everything. Like, it was just something. You want to come sit down? You good? Okay. It was just something that like rolled off the tongue. Like, I would get caught every time. That's the thing. I wasn't a good liar, but I couldn't stop doing it. And my parents knew. They're like, everything you say is a lie. And I was like, no, you can trust me. Like, you can trust me. And they were like, and sometimes they kept trusting me, which was, like, really interesting on their part. But I was just a liar. And, you know, I was 12 years old when I started to drink. It was this, I was living in Kansas at the time, and there was this, like, party for my friend's older sister's 16th birthday. And it was, like, in a farm. I had just switched wearing girl, like, from boys' clothes to girls' clothes, and I, like, went to Aeropostale because the older girls wear girls' clothes, and I think I was, like, hitting puberty, and I was like, oh, it's time to just make the big switch. And so, I, like, in the makeup, too, like, right, like, I, like, was ordering this, like, you know, I was switching myself, right? Like, I was like, okay, this is who I was, but, like, I'm going to be this other thing now, and I'm going to wear girls' clothes and wear makeup and go to this party, and there's going to be alcohol there, and I can't wait. I hope you're laughing at me.
I am.
That makes me feel really good about myself. I really just want you guys to laugh. So I go to this party. I remember the outfit I was wearing. Me and my friend were, like, getting hyped about it all week. We were like, we're going to, like, get, you know, we're going to, like, you know, it's going to be crazy. We're going to be wild. We were practicing, like, dancing. We were practicing, like, how we were going to dance to songs. Like, in my parents' basement. And, you know, it was, like, this big elaborate, I'm staying at this person's house, da-da-da-da. Okay, whatever. Huge, huge razor. Like, a great party. Like, a really great party. There was, like, kegs everywhere. There was something called Summer Brew. It was, like, lemonade and beer. It's not Summer Brew. It's just lemonade and beer. That's what I had. And, you know, there was these boys there that, you know, I was in my girl clothes. And they were like, you know, she's cute. And I was like, yeah, that's right. And they said it in front of my face. And I was like, this girl clothes is, like, was working out. You know, like, I'm drinking the Summer Brew. They're thinking I'm cute. Like, this is awesome. And I had a great night until the cops came. That really complicated things. I ended up crying that night. I know, I cried. I cry a lot. I ended up crying that night. I was hiding in this, like, secret room. Some people had to take care of me. I don't know, right? And I didn't get in trouble with the cops. But the next morning, I remember feeling like, oh, I need to apologize for my behavior. And also, like, when's your sister's next party? Right? Like, that was, like, so much fun. Like, the cops came, yeah, that's fine. Like, I'm pretty scared that it's going to be on the news and my parents are going to find out. I didn't know at the time they don't, like, put parties they bust on the news, but I was really paranoid. I was like, nothing can, like, I can't get caught because, like, this is my new thing. You know, girls' clothes parties. Yeah, I just couldn't wait to do it again. There was consequences, like, that night. To me, though, they were fine. Like, it wasn't a big deal. Like, I didn't go get arrested. I, like, embarrassed myself, but, like, I don't really care about that, really. Like, compared to, like, drinking and, like, feeling unbelievable when I drink. Like, oh, wow. I got really drunk that night, and it was just, like, this is awesome. Like, I wasn't so angry anymore, and it was just, like, you know, I hear this a lot in meetings for the past, what, like, 11 years. I said my sobriety date, didn't I? Yeah, September, yeah, okay, 2012, yeah. And it was just, like, wow, like, I didn't think anything was missing from my life. I didn't feel, like, disconnected, but when I drank, after that night, then I felt disconnected. Then I felt something was wrong with me. Then I felt, like, life was just, like, so unbelievably uncomfortable sober that, like, I couldn't go back. Like, maybe before that night, if I, you know, whatever, I wasn't, like, super aware. So, yeah, I was, like, 12, which, if you've met a 12-year-old, like, yeesh, right? Like a child. But, you know, after that night, I was always looking for opportunities. And it was very clear immediately that my consumption of alcohol was just, like, a lot. Like, as much as I could find. Like, sleep outside, you know, like, break into people's belongings to find more alcohol. Like, find it at all costs and drink all of it. And it was like, yeah, that's how you party. You know, that's, like, that's what it's about. That's, like, how to have a good time. And, like, like, 12 years old, couldn't drink a lot. My parents had these rules which were really uncomfortable for me. And I started getting caught drinking, like, quite immediately. Like, I remember, like, 6 months after that night, we moved to Arkansas, right? I don't know why I had a conscience there, but, you know, it was like this come to Jesus with my parents. Like, my brother had to fess up to some stuff he did, and then my brother, like, we pass each other, and then really it was like, don't lie to. And so at first, I was like, I gotta lie to them. But then I ended up telling them what happened. They, like, really wanted to know, like, was I keeping anything from them? And because they knew something had changed in my personality. Like, I was, like, pretty, I don't know. They said I was, like, an easy kid. Like, I wasn't, like, combative or rude or, like, borderline violent or just, like, horrible to be around. And then I started to become, like, cranky. It would be, like, a good day, right? Like, it was really hard to be around me. And they were like, well, you know, what's happening? So I told them, right? And then that was, you know, I learned my lesson. I didn't tell them anything after that because I got in trouble. And they called these people's parents, and they were like, hey, like, this isn't cool. My daughter's 12. Why'd you let her drink? And I was mortified. I was mortified that I got in trouble and that my parents weren't cool parents, right? And then I never told them anything again, right? Like, I couldn't risk it. Because then I kind of got grounded, and they took my phone away. And, it was just like, I don't deal with that. Like, I should have lied. I really was like, I should have lied. I'm going to lie every time after this. And that's what I did. And again, I'm a bad liar. I'm a really bad liar. So I got caught all the time. I get grounded for 2 weeks, something like the previous speaker was saying, like, drink, get grounded for a couple weeks. The minute I was out, I was drinking again, grounded again. I mean, I would like butt dial my parents at Taco Bell at 2 a.m., you know? And, you know, I had just called from my friend's house phone that I said I was sleeping at because it had gotten so bad that they had to, you know, I had to, I don't know why, you know, whatever. I was 20 minutes after that, I was calling from Taco Bell, like, absolutely hammered, and they're like, where are you? And, like, I'm sleeping. They're like, you could, like, hear you at Taco Bell. I'm like, no, I'm asleep. And they're like, call from the house, I'm just too tired, I can't do it, right? And, of course, grounded, again. And so these consequences are pretty much my drinking, right? Like, dangerous situations, I didn't care. Grounded, lying, don't care. Wrecking cars, don't care. Eventually, school started to slip, don't care. Like, inconvenient, yeah, maybe. I really wanted to make a lot of money. Like, I really wanted people to say, like, oh, you're so smart, like, you're so good at this, you know, like, you're so much better than me. I really wanted people to say that. I wanted people to look at my life and be like, wow, like, you really got it together. But I was going to drink, you know, and people in Grey's Anatomy did it so I could do it. And, you know, I never wanted to stop drinking. The thought was in my head at the end every single day, how am I going to get alcohol? Who do I need to call? Because I was underage when I got sober. Who do I need to call? Where do I need to meet them? When do the liquor stores open? What day is it? Oh, I got to drive to Missouri because, you know, Arkansas, you couldn't buy liquor every single day, and you could only buy it certain hours. And it was always in my mind, how am I going to get it? Who do I need to steal from? What pharmaceuticals do I need in order to keep drinking to make a little money to buy more alcohol? Every single day at the end, and every single day I was drinking, you know, and it was bonus if I had enough money to get a pack of cigarettes. Like, that, I was like doing really, really well. Everything was slipping. You know, my parents like, live in your car. Like, you're like, we can't have you in this house anymore. Like, you're so like, impossible to be around. I was impossible to be around. Impossible. And I didn't want to stop drinking. These things were just like, happens, right? Happens. You live. Like, I'm not going to change my lifestyle for this. And then one morning, July 10th, like, I woke up and I was going to the dentist, and I got arrested. All these things happened. Because when you drink as much as I do, you get arrested. You fall asleep outside. You punch people in the face. You know, just like, all these things happen. I was like, what do you want me to do about it? I drink. What, like, don't be around me. I don't care. I went to the dentist, and before I went to the dentist, I stayed up all night because I couldn't sleep because of, you know, all the substances I was putting in my body and drinking and et cetera. And, you know, I was journaling before, and I have all these journals, like, the week before I came into AA, and it was, like, writing, like, all over the page, like, weird drawings, and it said, like, I should probably check out an AA meeting. I have like a tendency towards that. I think I have a weird relationship with alcohol, a tendency to like over drink or something like that. Just like ha ha ha's everywhere. Like ha ha ha's all over the page. Like I don't like mint like crazy. I was wearing orange and orange lipstick. Do you see? Like my skin does not do orange. Yeah, it's really, 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 really bad. Picking my face. And so I go to the dentist. I'm like, oh, I'm going to go to jail again. Like, this is terrible. The dentist is going to, like, know I'm, like, Googling AA meetings on my phone. Ugh. I get out of the dentist. I go to this noon AA meeting. I go to the wrong church, you know. I'm like, where's the AA meeting? The little girl is like, oh, I think it's the other one. You know, I was terrifying people. Like, I did not look like... I am dressed like a pumpkin today. I am wearing orange, but, like, it was a different orange vibe. I find the right meeting, and I sit there, and it's these people in Bentonville, Arkansas. Incredible meet. Like, you know, like, they were saying all the things that I was like, oh no, like, oh God, like, how do I get out of here, right? Like, they're like, I understand them way too much. Like, I knew I was an alcoholic that first meeting. I knew my drinking was not, like, normal. I knew all these things, but I didn't know, like, really what that meant. I didn't know I'd be, like, doomed to, like, jails, institutions, or death, right? I didn't know how, like serious it was. And they were saying these things, and I, like, really had plans of, like, running out as fast as I could because I had a lot of, like, wild turkey and wine bottles in my car. Like, maybe a 40 if I was lucky. And I needed to drink. You know, I wasn't sober when I got to the meeting, but I needed to drink. Meeting was over. All these women came. They surrounded me. And then I was like, okay, like, I need to get out now. Here's your number. Here's your, like, you know, they gave me a big book. They gave me this book. They gave me that thing, like a pamphlet, whatever. And this one woman who sat right next to me, I don't know, like, she was brave, right? Like, I was like detoxing, sweat, you know, not good. And she talked to me for an hour after that meeting, telling me about her drinking, you know, telling me about what it was like for her. And I was thinking, like, this is kind of, like, interesting. Like, okay, why am I talking so much to this woman? Like, why am I here still? Why am I not drinking in my car? And then I remember thinking, like, I'm not going to tell her I have this stuff in my car, but if she asks me, then I'll tell her. We were walking out, and, you know, it'd been a long, long time. She's like, oh, do you have anything in your car you need to clean out? I was like, yes, right? So we got these big garbage bags, and we put all the liquor in there. She looked at some, like, pill bottles, and I was like, no, not those, but you can, like, the liquor, that that's my medicine, you know, it's medicine. She took the liquor, we threw it in the garbage bag, and then this other woman was like, there's a meeting tonight. And I was like, I'm gonna come back in 2 weeks. Like, tonight? Like, but I went, right? I don't know. Like, there was, I just went. And, you know, they said, there's a meeting tomorrow. I'll meet you there at noon. I was like, what? Tomorrow? All right. Of course, I have nothing going on. My life is, like, everything is, like, there's nothing going on. I have no job. I'm not in school. I have nothing to do but drink. So, and that's how I liked my schedule. And so I was like, all right, I'll go to this meeting. I was like, tired finally. Like, I don't know. Like, it was just time, right? It was just like time. I was okay saying, yes, I'll go to that meeting. And that's how, like, it was for me for the first couple of months. I couldn't show up sober. I didn't, you know, I couldn't be in a meeting totally, like, straight-minded. I really couldn't. I didn't even know what I was doing for a couple of, like, a while. I don't know. But I was like, I can't be in that meeting sober. Because if I'm meeting in that meeting sober, like, I'm gonna drink. Like, I just couldn't do it. So I was, like, taking a bunch of these, like, pills that I had used to help me drink more, which is kind of funny. But, you know, they told me to keep coming. They were like, they knew. Like, you could tell. Like, I was behaving, like, really erratically, but they were like, just keep coming, come tomorrow. This person, that woman that talked to me said, I'll be your sponsor. You know, there's, like, this big book, it's called Alcoholics Anonymous, this one, we call it the big book, it has 12 steps in it that we do as our program, and I'm sure all you guys know that, but sometimes, no, something. People were saying big book, like, all these things. I'm like, what the age is that? Like, I don't know. So this is what that is. We started to work the steps out of this. We would meet once a week, and we would go through this book, and she had me write things down on paper. Like, you know, we did, you know, steps 1, 2, and 3. I did a fourth step, and we read a fifth step together. Like, I wasn't sober when I wrote this, so it's strange. And we sat down and read it together. I made the list for my amends. I started to do those amends. Then she kept wanting to meet and read the book and, like, do other things. And, you know, I was through with that. So I'd stopped the medicine at this point. The medicine. I would stop taking anything to affect my mind. I got a new sponsor. And for you know, we did the steps again, but, you know, I would stop around step 9. That's when I really enjoyed having boyfriends or other activities, anything else, anything but, like, more AA. Like, I went to a meeting once a day. Is that enough for you people? Like, sponsoring people, like, I'd rather do anything else. And you know, in my mind, I was getting, like, parades thrown for me for being so young and so sober. You know, I was, like, 19, 20, 21 in my, you know, first couple of years, and they were like, you're doing so well. And I was like, yeah, I am. Like, thank you. They're like, lift me up. Tell me how special I am. I loved it. God, I loved it. And I didn't really, I just went to meetings every day. You know, and I was in school 12 hours a day because I was just waiting for it to be over. God, I was waiting for everything to be over. But if I kept myself busy enough with other things, then I wasn't so... 5 minutes. Sorry, guys. Okay, so if I kept myself busy enough, then that brought me to the beginning of this talk when I moved to Boston for grad school. I was, like, so untreated in alcoholism. And, you know, I hear Arisa speak at the Monday night meeting that was in across the street. And, you know, I asked her to be my sponsor, and she said, read the big book and, like, find your holes in your program. And I'm like, I don't have any. Like, that's ridiculous exercise. But, you know, like, I'm, like, pretty, like, actually, like, pretty much wanting to die. So I did it. And I really wanted her to be my sponsor because everyone was like, you know, have you met Arisa? And I was like, yeah, she's going to be my sponsor. Like, you know, she's it. So, you know, I read it, and, you know, I remember thinking, I really, you know, there's this line in the book, constant thought of others and how we can work for them. I remember I was like, that's kind of a hole. Like, I definitely don't do that. I think that was the only hole I found with her in a car, right? And, yeah, I was like, I don't do that. I think of myself and how I can get what I want all the time. But I think that's it. I don't get resentful anymore. So I think, you know, we can skip forward. And, you know, she read me The Bedevilment. And, you know, I'm sobbing in her car. I'm sobbing in the Suburban outside the Monday night meeting. She said, like, 3 things, right? I'm crying. I'm like, oh, my God, I'm so sick. She's like, yeah, you are. Yeah, you're really good. Sarah knew. I mean, anyone who was with a 10-mile radius knew that I was, like, a toxic person. And so then I could, like, start from somewhere, you know? And I've worked this up with Arisa, like, I don't know how many times since then. Probably under 5, over 4. Yeah, that's good math. Something like that. I don't know. I could think about it, but I only have 5 minutes. So, and so every time what happens is, like, this newfound freedom, right? She directed me, you will sponsor people. You know, I started doing, like, that morning and night meditation and 11-step inventory written with pen, which really changed my life, right? Like, I think I've missed, like, I don't know, probably under 20 days since 2016 of writing it. Which was, like, I was like, that's so dramatic. Everything's so dramatic with you people. Everything's so dramatic. Like, never drinking again for the rest of my life. So dramatic. Nah, right? I started sponsoring people, which really was, like, right? So it's an experience that I, you know, you must not miss. Bright spot of my life. And that's, I'm gonna cry again, right? Because it's true, but it's also, like, I thought that was so freaking corny and horrible and depressing. But then when I was, like, depressed and wanted to die, I was like, okay, I'll do it. Like, whatever. Like, I don't have any other options. And, you know, that's just kind of been my life so far. Like, it just gets better and better and better. And, you know, like, what was shared before, like, there's been, like, things that happen that are uncomfortable for me. Like, I don't like being uncomfortable, but uncomfortable things happen. But I'm not that person that, like, throws rocks at windows, like, psycho. Like, sometimes maybe, but, like, not all the time. Not a lot, right? Like, I pray in the morning every day, and most of the time I mean it, right? And even if I don't mean it, I still do it. Like, there's these things, like, I don't want to do, but I do anyways. Like, I show up to meetings when I don't want to. Like, Bruce is always like, oh, you know, what's your job in AA? And I'm like, oh, that thing again. Still? Jobs in AA? Okay. Yeah, doing it, like service, doing it when I don't want to. And like, guess what? It's like so amazing. I really love it. It makes my life so free and so wonderful. And sometimes I don't want to do the things that makes me feel free and wonderful. I want to go back to that person that feels so empty and so horrible and lay in my bed and get boyfriends that like I really don't want to know their middle or last name, right? It doesn't matter to me, right? In my mind, I'm like, that's a good idea, right? But what the big book and like these steps in this book have done for me was like, you know, that like insanity of like drinking and like all I can think about is drinking and that is my idea for life. Like that's like gone. Like what? Like that's like completely gone. When I was 10 years sober last year, I wanted to drink every day for like 4 or 5 months, every day. Uncomfortable things were happening, you know, and you know I wanted to drink, which makes a lot of sense. And you know this thing still worked. I didn't because what? Because like this stuff, like call people. I was calling people every day. Anyways, but yeah, my life keeps getting like unbelievably like more satisfying and like more happy. And like I can sit up here and like cry in front of you guys, and I really don't care. Like okay, whatever. Like you hate me or you love me. Like. Come to another meeting and hear somebody else. Thank you so much for letting me speak.
Thank you, Taylor. Now